Yeah, I was tempted for CliffsNotes to make it a one sentence summary, because you'll see the actual action of the chapter is pretty negligible, but.
All right, Clifford.
One more time.
Yeah. All right. So, Clifford, we're back again. Another chapter.
Indeed, we are.
What are we doing today?
Yep. Today, the Black Gate is closed. Book 4, second book of the Two Towers.
Yeah, chapter 3.
Chapter 3.
Yeah, okay. I feel like we're having, like, extra lag today.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know. I think we're good. No worries. All right.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So we kind of just jumped into it today. Didn't even look at the outline. I definitely sent it to you, though. So, yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. This could potentially just be our easiest chapter. What do you think?
Yeah. I was tempted for CliffsNotes to make it a one-sentence summary. because you'll see the actual action of the chapter is pretty negligible. But... anyways,
yeah, it really is.
Should be a good one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. This one, it's pretty just crucial plot setup. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. Maybe this might not be the deepest one. This might not be the, I don't know. It might just end up being the longest one yet. Who knows with us? So,
it seems like the point of the chapter is like driving home things that we've already gotten glimpses of.
Yeah.
So the plot doesn't progress all that much, but certain ideas are either introduced or really kind of hammered home.
Yeah.
Emphasized.
Yeah. If you don't know what's coming, I guess this is kind of a switch in direction, but I guess we're kind of spoiling it. Why don't you do Cliff's Notes first and then we'll just talk about it.
Okay. So Frodo, Sam, and Gollum reach the gates of Mordor, but quickly realize that they can go no further without certain capture. As they debate their next steps, Gollum offers a secret alternate route into Mordor, further to the south. Frodo agrees after reaffirming the terms of Gollum's oath, but Sam remains dubious.
Awesome. Okay, cool. So, we open up. As soon as the chapter opens, they get to the Black Gate within, what, a sentence?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, the first sentence literally says their journey to Mordor was over. Okay. So, why don't we read about the Black Gate, though? Because this is actually... Mm-hmm. Substantive, interesting, vivid, cool.
Before the next day dawned, their journey to Mordor was over. The marshes and the desert were behind them. Before them, darkling against a pallid sky, the great mountains reared their threatening heads. Upon the west of Mordor marched the gloomy range of Ephel Duath, the Mountains of Shadow, and upon the north the broken peaks and barren ridges of Arid Lithuri, gray as ash. But as these ranges approached one another, being indeed but parts of one great wall about the mournful plains of Lithlad and Gorgoroth, and the bitter inland sea of Nurnin amidmost, they swung out long arms northward, and between these arms there was a deep defile. This was Cirith Gorgor, the haunted pass, the entrance to the land of the enemy. High cliffs towered upon either side, and thrust forward from its mouth were two sheer hills, black-boned and bare. Upon them stood the teeth of Mordor, two towers, strong and tall. In days long past, they were built by the men of Gondor in their pride and power, after the overthrow of Sauron and his flight, lest he should seek to return to his old realm. But the strength of Gondor failed, and men slept, and for long years the towers stood empty. Then Sauron returned. Now the watchtowers, which had fallen into decay, were repaired and filled with arms, and garrisoned with ceaseless vigilance. Stony-faced they were, with dark window holes staring north and east and west, and each window was full of sleepless eyes. Across the mouth of the pass, from cliff to cliff, the Dark Lord had built a rampart of stone. In it there was a single gate of iron, and upon its battlement sentinels paced unceasingly. Beneath the hills on either side, the rock was bored into 100 caves and maggot holes. There was a host of orcs lurked, ready at a signal to issue forth like black ants going to war. None could pass the teeth of Mordor and not feel their bite, unless they were summoned by Sauron, or knew the secret passwords that would open the Mororan, the black gate of his land. The two hobbits gazed at the towers and the wall in despair. Even from a distance they could see in the dim light the movement of the black guards upon the wall, and the patrols before the gate. They lay now peering over the edge of a rocky hollow beneath the outstretched shadow of the northmost buttress of Ethelduath. Winging the heavy air in a straight flight, a crow, maybe, would have flown but a furlong from their hiding place to the black summit of the nearest tower. A faint smoke curled above it, as if fire smoldered in the hill beneath.
Okay. Pretty cool description. Gives a pretty good lay of the land, I'd say.
Sounds like this is, well, it's combination fortress with landscape.
Yeah, okay.
You know, a little bit like Helm's Deep. We've got mountains that are kind of like castle battlements.
Right, and then there are actual towers, which were notably built by Gondor after they defeated Sauron the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you think of this wall? Do we think this is like a smooth stone wall? It's not like in the movie. The movie makes it this metal thing that the entire thing opens. That's just not correct.
Mm-hmm.
There's clearly the gate in the middle, and we can assume that's a huge mm-hmm. gate. Lots of things can come in and out of, or really big things can come in and out of. Right. But the wall itself, is it just like pretty neatly piled rubble, but still rubble? Or is it a smooth stone thing all the way across?
I was envisioning smooth stone.
See, was
proper masonry.
I was wondering where they said beneath the hills. I guess this is the hills. Beneath the hills on either side, the rock was born into 100 caves and maggot holes. I was kind of wondering if the orcs could come through the walls, like some cracks in the rubble as well.
Oh,
like
perhaps.
If it's more of a rampart, because I think he was using the word rampart.
Yeah, across the mouth of the pass from cliff to cliff, the Dark Lord had built a rampart of stone.
Right, so does a rampart imply like a really solid wall, or does that just mean it's kind of crappy?
To me, implies pretty solid, like a castle wall. Not necessarily any interior space, like maybe just a thing out there. But anyways, it sounds like there's pretty much a mountain range.
Yeah.
And you can see this from the map also. There's a mountain range that's like the wall, the fence around Mordor. And then there's a big old valley cutting right through the corner of it. That's the primary entrance. And then Sauron has blocked up that entrance with this rampart. This big wall, and in that rampart there's a gate, and as part of this rampart construction there's towers, watchtowers, but then there's also hills on either side, so sounds pretty forbidding all around. Many points for the enemy to be on the lookout, many points for the enemy to defend from, few ways to attack. Sounds like a very solid fortress at the end of the day.
And when the hobbits are looking at this thing, I thought the movie actually did a pretty good job with that image of them coming up over the side of the hill to see the Black Gate, and it's just, damn, we're in trouble. But it kind of felt like the opening of the original Star Wars movie, where the tiny little ship is racing across the space trying to get away from the huge Imperial destroyer that Darth Vader's on.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's kind of that overwhelming outnumbered situation, you know.
Right.
Yeah. And then I don't know, well, we just said it, but those towers were built by Gondor, but eventually they were abandoned when Gondor's power was waning, which you kind of wonder, like, man, this is kind of a dumb, if you were keeping a guard on Mordor, it's kind of dumb just to abandon those. But you know,
no kidding. Yeah.
But also, we've seen this before. Isengard was originally built by the men of Gondor, and then they kind of just actually gave it to Saruman as a gift. But
Right. They've conveniently built all the nice fortresses all around, some of which have been co-opted, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I find it weird that these towers built by the men of Gondor, who are still good guys and were good guys back then, you know, this is Boromir's people. So, I don't know. I guess Boromir was a little bit of a controversial figure. But anyways, he's mostly a good guy. But, you know, it's weird that these towers can be turned to such evil purposes and seem so imposing and evil as well. Kind of strange.
Right. It's like the implication is like they've been corrupted instead of Sauron erected, like, the opposite in their place, or destroyed everything and built his own stuff. He's corrupted all the things that they've built.
Right, right. Yeah, all right. Well, so going on here, the first thing that they hear is they hear a horn for the, it seems like that's the morning bell for the workday to start. I guess that was all the rage back in.
Or like changing of the guard type thing.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I think that was a pretty common thing in factories where you kind of had a house on it. Like that was common all over the world, really, especially 100 years ago, you know?
Okay.
Like the work bell to start the morning shift. Which, yeah, probably the late night shift's probably coming off. But, yeah, because they got here at dawn.
Mm-hmm.
And so Sam's basically, he has some of those lines where he's super impressed that they made it this far. And, you know, one of those things like, man, if my gaffer, you know, which is his dad, saw me now, he'd be impressed or something, you know, right? Yeah. And Gollum basically says, yeah, you know, you're not getting in here, right? You can't go in this way. But Frodo says, I'm commanded to enter Mordor. And he goes on, he says, I know no other way, therefore I shall go this way. I do not ask anyone to go with me. But it's at this point, and there's this, the conversation is a little funny itself, but we don't have to read all of it, that Gollum says, well, actually there's another way to go. And both of them kind of freak out on him, like, well, why haven't you said that before? And Gollum dutifully, purely out of duty, says, well, you guys never asked, you know, you asked me to be your guide to the Black Gate. So that's what I did. Here we are. but now it's like, oh, course correction. There's another potential way into this, you know?
Yeah. Gollum gets all semantic and he's like, had I known that you wanted to go into Mordor, you should have said, I would like to go into Mordor. And then I would have taken you into Mordor.
Right. Now, the other thing, though, you can't really blame him because Gollum has not put two and two together that they're going into Mordor to destroy the ring. He doesn't really understand why they're going into Mordor. He's just like, all right, whatever. I'm bound. You know, I swore an oath that I would obey you. So you
guys, he does recognize that going to the Black Gate, he says, you might as well give the ring to the Black Hand, meaning the Black Hand of Sauron.
Right. Yeah. So it was kind of like, we didn't read it, but it was kind of interesting what Frodo, if you read Frodo's line there, he's really committed to just do this. Like, try to attempt to sneak into the Black Gate because he doesn't know it. This is before Gollum reveals the way. He doesn't know any other way, so he doesn't care how extremely impractical and how just bad an idea it is to sneak up to the Black Gate. If he has to do it, he will, because he's been commanded by the Council of Elrond to go do this. So if this was the only way, he was going to try it. It's not like he would wait it out for like better hope, you know. But now Gollum reveals this way, and so he has to weigh up what he's going to do. So why don't we read about what Sam thinks of this, what Frodo thinks of this, that there's this other way. This one's kind of long, so how about you just command us when we're going to break it up. So I'll start, because it's kind of Sam's thoughts a little bit. Sam frowned. If he could have bored holes in Gollum with his eyes, he would have done. His mind was full of doubt. To all appearances, Gollum was genuinely distressed and anxious to help Frodo. But Sam, remembering the overheard debate, remember that from the last chapter, found it hard to believe that the long-submerged Smeagol had come out on top, that the voice, at any rate, had the last word in the debate. Sam's guess that the Smeagol and Gollum halves, or what in his own mind he called Slinker and Stinker, had made a truce and a temporary alliance. Neither wanted the enemy to get the ring. Both wished to keep Frodo from capture and under their eyes as long as possible. At any rate, as long as Stinker still had a chance of laying hands on his precious. Whether there really was another way into Mordor, Sam doubted. And it's a good thing neither half of the old villain don't know what Master means to do, he thought. If he knew that Mr. Frodo was trying to put an end to his precious for good and all, there'd be trouble pretty quick, I bet. Anyhow, old Stinker is so frightened of the enemy, and he's under orders of some kind from him, or was, that he'd give us away rather than be caught helping us, and rather than let the precious be melted, maybe. At least that's my idea. And I hope the Master will think it out carefully. He's as wise as any, but he's soft-hearted. That's what he is. It's beyond any Gamgee to guess what he'll do next. You want to take it, or should we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, let's talk about it. So, Sam's kind of being simple Sam, thinking to himself, but he's pretty much nailed it, right? He's very astute. in observing what's going on.
Yeah, except I get confused which one's Slinker and Stinker. I think Slinker is the Smeagol, which is the good one, and Stinker is the bad one, which is Gollum.
Yeah, I think of it as, like, Stinker is bad. Slinker is, like, you're slinking around, like, you're real spineless. Like, the way that Smeagol is always groveling at Frodo's feet. Like, poor Smeagol, help me. I'm just trying to serve you. I don't have anything to eat. So, that's how I would try to remember it.
Okay. Well, then he lays out, too, that, okay, yeah, Gollum, Sam basically explicitly says Gollum doesn't know that we're going to destroy this thing or else both these guys would be all over Frodo right away.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else we got to cover from that? I think that's kind of self-explanatory.
No, but, I mean, as Sam mentions, that debate that he heard when Smeagol Gollum was kind of arguing with self over Frodo's body in the last chapter, that's exactly what's coming into play now. So
Right.
Keep that in mind as we go forwards.
Yeah. Do you want to take the next chunk of it?
Frodo did not answer Gollum at once. While these doubts were passing through Sam's slow but shrewd mind, he stood gazing out towards the dark cliffs of Cirith Gorgor. The hollow in which they had taken refuge was delved into the side of a low hill, at some little height above a long trench-like valley that lay between it and the outer buttresses of the mountain wall. In the midst of the valley stood the black foundations of the Western Watchtower. By the morning light, the roads that converged upon the Gate of Mordor could now be clearly seen, pale and dusty, one winding back northwards, another dwindling eastwards into the mist that clung about the feet of Arad Lithwy, and a third that ran towards him. As it bent sharply round the tower, it entered a narrow defile and passed not far below the hollow where he stood. Westward, to his right, it turned, skirting the shoulders of the mountains, and went off southwards into the deep shadows that mantled all the western sides of Ethel Duath. Beyond his sight, it journeyed on into the narrow land between the mountains and the great river. Do we need to digest that geography at all?
Tell me. I'm kind of good. If you want to keep going.
I'm a little bit lost, but I think the main thing is he's just observing his surroundings, and he's seeing they're at the corner, the northwest corner of these walls of Mordor. He's seeing many paths converging, including one that leads out to the sort of southwest from where they are.
Right.
Into the, I don't know if they mentioned woods, but kind of into the mists.
Okay. Yeah, and it's more so direct south too. Like a little bit west, but mostly south.
Right. You're right. As he gazed, Frodo became aware that there was a great stir and movement on the plain. It seemed as if whole armies were on the march, though for the most part they were hidden by the reeks and fumes drifting from the fens and wastes beyond. But here and there he caught the gleam of spears and helmets, and over the levels beside the roads horsemen could be seen riding in many companies. He remembered his vision from afar upon Amon Hen, so few days before, though now it seemed many years ago. Then he knew that the hope that had for one wild moment stirred in his heart was vain. The trumpets had not rung in challenge, but in greeting. This was no assault upon the Dark Lord by the men of Gondor, risen like avenging ghosts from the graves of valor long passed away. These were men of other race, out of the wide east lands, gathering to the summons of their overlord, armies that had encamped before his gate by night and now marched in to swell his mounting power. As if suddenly made fully aware of the peril of their position, alone in the growing light of day, so near to this vast menace, Frodo quickly drew his frail gray hood close upon his head and stepped down into the dell. Then he turned to Gollum. "Smeagol," he said, "I will trust you once more. Indeed, it seems that I must do so, and that it is my fate to receive help from you, where I least looked for it, and your fate to help me, whom you long pursued with evil purpose. So far, you have deserved well of me, and have kept your promise truly. Truly, I say and mean," he added with a glance at Sam, "for twice now we have been in your power, and you have done no harm to us, nor have you tried to take from me what you once sought. May the third time prove the best. But I warn you, Smeagol, you are in danger."
Yes, master, said Gollum. Dreadful danger. Smeagol's bones shake to think of it, but he doesn't run away. He must help nice master.
I did not mean the danger that we all share, said Frodo. I mean a danger to yourself alone. You swore a promise by what you call the precious. Remember that. It will hold you to it, but it will seek a way to twist it to your own undoing. Already you are being twisted. You revealed yourself to me just now, foolishly. Give it back to Smeagol, you said. Do not say that again. Do not let that thought grow in you. You will never get it back. but the desire of it may betray you to a bitter end. You will never get it back. In the last need, Smeagol, I should put on the precious, and the precious mastered you long ago. If I, wearing it, were to command you, you would obey, even if it were to leap from a precipice or to cast yourself into the fire. And such would be my command. So have a care, Smeagol.
Sam looked at his master with approval, but also with surprise. There was a look in his face and a tone in his voice that he had not known before. It had always been a notion of his that the kindness of dear Mr. Frodo was of such high degree that it must imply a fair measure of blindness. Of course, he also firmly held the incompatible belief that Mr. Frodo was the wisest person in the world, with the possible exception of old Mr. Bilbo and of Gandalf. Gollum, in his own way, and with much more excuse as an acquaintance, was much briefer, may have made a similar mistake, confusing kindness and blindness. At any rate, this speech abashed and terrified him. He groveled on the ground and could speak no clear words, but nice master. All right, so what do we think of that? That actually gets to be a big section that we definitely have to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is maybe the most important part of the chapter, I'd say, is this little spiel by Frodo right here.
Yeah, that or where they're going to go, but yeah.
This whole time leading up to now, the way it's been framed, we hear Sam's thoughts, we hear a little bit of Frodo's thoughts, and Frodo's come off to me as a bit naive. Like, he's given Gollum the benefit of the doubt at every turn. We know Gollum is up to no good in certain ways, and Sam is kind of rightly suspicious and is kind of put off by, like, he's like, I'll do whatever Frodo says, but I do not trust Gollum at all. And Sam's kind of out on his own because he doesn't know if Frodo is, like, fully aware of all of these things at play. And here Frodo just kind of lays down the law and is like, clearly has a game plan, knows what's going on, maybe has a better understanding of what's going on inside Gollum's head than any of the other characters do. Yeah. And yeah, really, really clarifies things and is like, if you get up to this trickery that I know you're very tempted to do, Gollum, it will end up in the worst way possible for you, which is me putting on the ring and destroying you, which is kind of, right. It's kind of scary. Frodo would be so powerful at that point, but it would also be like the end of his, I don't know how to describe it, like his righteousness in like resisting the power of the ring or something. Like he's been fighting the good fight in not putting it on as much as possible. And if he fully gave in, if he was prompted by Gollum or the situation or whatever, that would be a big shortcoming on his part, but it would spell bad things for Gollum regardless.
Yeah. Do you think it's Frodo's just being very wise and just being a champ at handling Gollum, or the ring is making him more powerful and almost not so much wise, but just smarter and better equipped to kind of dominate Gollum and influence
him?
Yeah,
that's a good point. I hadn't considered the smartness aspect of the ring influencing him, but I could certainly see that it makes sense. Like the ring is like a tool for domination, so it's not just a raw power type thing. It would make sense that it was helping Frodo in many ways become more domineering. So yeah, I buy that.
Yeah, it might. I'm just kind of spitballing, but like, how else does he be so much sterner than the Hobbit that we met at the beginning of the Fellowship of the Ring, who's pretty joyful and happy and stuff, whereas now Frodo's just basically getting the maximum out of Gollum, but also being careful around him too. I feel like the ring probably does help you with that.
The other part of me is thinking, it's like, okay, Frodo's been kind of trudging along for two or three chapters, feeling bad for himself, letting Sam feed him and Gollum lead the way. And now he's kind of like maybe waking up a little bit, putting the pieces together, seeing the gate getting turned around or hitting a dead end is like he's reaffirming his quest that he set out to do. And he's like trying to come back to, you know, the Council of Elrond, the advice of Gandalf. What is my big purpose? What do I have to do?
Yeah.
And that, in a way, might be clarifying a lot of things for him. And then I also feel like him having the ring means he is becoming wise to the way he's becoming wise to the way Gollum's head works.
Right, right.
Because he's feeling these emotional pulls and stuff. So he's starting to understand stuff that Gollum might not even fully understand about how, like, so that the trickery going on. So I guess it's a lot of factors at once. But yeah, without a doubt, the ring is influencing him. And in this situation, it seems like it's influencing him for the better. Right? It's just maybe a little dangerous. Right.
Yeah, if not better for the practical.
Yeah.
All right, okay, so anyways, Frodo then asks Gollum about the other way, and so they spend paragraphs talking about the route and stuff, and you can read the whole conversation for yourself if you're interested. But anyways, the bottom line is they're going to travel south down the main road on this side of the Ethel Duwaith. So that's the Ethel Duwaith is the mountain range that runs south. Get a map if you want to, you know, keep up with this. But they're going to go on the west side of this that's not...
The mountains of Mordor are conveniently square-shaped, if you look at the map. And so, as we were saying, they're at the corner, and they're just traveling down the west side of that western range.
Yeah, the range that runs parallel with the Great River. So they're going in between the Great River, Anduin, and this mountain range. So they're going to go south there, and so then... when they take the road south, they come to a crossroads. If you go west, that takes you to Osgiliath, which is where Gondor is. If you go south, eventually it takes you all the way to the Great Sea, but it gets really hot and deserty there. Now, if you go east, you go to Minas Ithil, which is the Tower of Moon, which has now become Minas Morgul. We've mentioned it before in the Council of Elrond chapter. It's a super nasty place. Once a good city, mm-hmm. now turned evil. And then there's mm-hmm. a road behind that that leads into Mordor, I guess. And so Sam, he's got a quote here. He says, so that's your advice, is it, said Sam? That we should go another long march south to find ourselves in the same fix or a worse one when we get there? If we ever do?
No, indeed, said Gollum. Hobbits must try to understand. He does not expect attack that way. His eye is all around, but it attends more to some places than to others. He can't see everything all at once, not yet. You see, he has conquered all the country west of the Shadowy Mountains down to the river, and he holds the bridges now. He thinks no one can come to the Moon Tower without fighting big battles at the bridges, or getting lots of boats which they cannot hide, and he will know about.
Gollum, interesting there, he's saying, you know, there's the eye that's looking out for everything. It can't see everything at once, so Gollum's thinking this way is going to be the most unexpected, and so they might actually have a chance to slip through here. Sam, meanwhile, still very skeptical. Sorry.
I feel bad. The lag is so off. But oddly, that actually parallels kind of this broader strategy from the Council of Elrond, where they decided to send Frodo and a very small company, or just Frodo and somebody else, to destroy the ring. Because it would be so unexpected, and Sauron would be looking for an army. So, even though this is a very different situation and different, you know,
different context. It might match up with those original motives too. But in the moment, for practical purposes, I don't think Sam and Frodo realize that, because they don't. They just don't know their way. You know, like they don't really know what God is leading them into. Like Sam's so skeptical, he'd potentially rather still just get caught here at the Black Gate instead of walking further south just to get caught down there, you know. he kind of just wants to get over with right away, you know. And that
but it's interesting that Gollum is he's playing out, like, he's like doing the same sort of war gaming they were at the Council of Elrond, and it seems like everybody knows that Sauron is going to be totally swayed by the prospect of an army coming to his front door.
Right.
Like, that's completely what he's waiting for.
Yeah. Well, and anyways, like, this way itself, there's this huge city, Minas Morgul, in its way on this path. You know, this is another pretty impossible one to get through. But Gollum says he knows a way off the beaten path where it's not like you have to go straight through Minas Morgul to get into Mordor. And so I don't know. This is kind of interesting to read about. So do you want to take Gollum?
Gollum crouched, and his voice sank to a whisper again. A little path leading up into the mountains, and then a stair, a narrow stair. Oh yes, very long and narrow, and then more stairs, and then, his voice sank even lower, a tunnel, a dark tunnel, and at last a little cleft, and a path high above the main pass. It was that way that Sméagol got out of the darkness, but it was years ago. The path may have vanished now, but perhaps not.
I do not like the sound of it at all, said Sam. Sounds too easy at any rate in the telling. If that path is still there, it'll be guarded too. Wasn't it guarded, Gollum? As he said this, he caught, or fancied he caught, a green gleam in Gollum's eye. Gollum muttered, but did not reply.
Is it not guarded? Asked Frodo sternly. And did you escape out of the darkness, Smeagol? Were you not rather permitted to depart upon an errand? That, at least, is what Aragorn thought, who found you by the dead marshes some years ago.
It's a lie, hissed Gollum, and an evil light came into his eyes at the naming of Aragorn. He lied on me. Yes, he did. I did escape, all by my poor self. Indeed, I am told to seek for the precious, and I have searched and searched. Of course I have, but not for the black one. The precious was ours. It was mine, I tell you. I did escape.
Frodo felt a strange certainty that in this matter, Gollum was for once not so far from the truth as might be suspected, that he had somehow found a way out of Mordor, and at least believed that it was by his own cunning. For one thing, he noted that Gollum used I, and that seemed usually to be a sign, on its rare occurrences, that some remnants of old truth and sincerity were for the moment on top. But even if Gollum could be trusted on this point, Frodo did not forget the wiles of the enemy. The escape may have been allowed or arranged, and well known in the Dark Tower. And in any case, Gollum was plainly keeping a good deal back. I ask you again, he said, is not this secret way guarded? But the name of Aragorn had put Gollum in a sullen mood. He had all the injured air of a liar suspected when for once he is told the truth, or part of it. He did not answer. Is it not guarded? Frodo repeated.
Yes, yes, perhaps. No safe places in this country, said Gollum sulkily. No safe places. But Master must try it, or go home. No other way. They could not get him to say any more. The name of the perilous place and the high pass he could not tell, or would not. Its name was Cirith Ungol, a name of dreadful rumor. Aragorn could perhaps have told them that name and its significance. Gandalf would have warned them, but they were alone, and Aragorn was far away, and Gandalf stood amid the ruin of Isengard and strove with Saruman, delayed by treason. Yet even as he spoke with his last words to Saruman and the Palantir crashed in fire upon the steps of Orthanc, his thought was ever upon Frodo and Samwise. Over the long leagues his mind sought for them in hope and pity. Maybe Frodo felt it, not knowing it, as he had upon Amon Hen, even though he believed that Gandalf was gone, gone forever into the shadow of Moria far away. He sat upon the ground for a long while, silent, his head bowed, striving to recall all that Gandalf had said to him. But, for his choice, he could recall no counsel. Indeed, Gandalf's guidance had been taken from them too soon, while the Dark Land was still very far away. How they should enter in at last, Gandalf had not said. Perhaps he could not say. Into the stronghold of the enemy of the North, into Dol Guldur, he had once ventured. But into Mordor, to the Mountain of Fire, and to Barad-dûr, since the Dark Lord rose in power again, had he ever journeyed there? Frodo did not think so. And here he was, a little halfling from the Shire, a simple hobbit of quiet countryside, expected to find a way where the Great Ones could not go, or dared not go. It was an evil fate, but he had to take it on himself. In his own sitting room in the faraway spring of another year, so remote that it now felt like a chapter in the story of the world's youth, when the trees of silver and gold were still in bloom. This was an evil choice. Which way should he choose? And if both led to terror and death, what good lay in choice? All right, so that was big as well.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts. You give your first thoughts.
This is like, I don't know. Even though we just saw Frodo play the powerful and wise character a few paragraphs back, now we're kind of reminded that these are two hobbits unmoored,
yep,
drifting in darkness pretty much.
Yeah.
And they're up against terrible odds, and all the power and wisdom that's kind of backing them, supporting them along the way is very distant at this point. And so it's, I don't know, I guess it's a little bit demoralizing, because on the one hand, they hit this dead end, and then Frodo is like reanimated and like, okay, we're going to go a different way. But this is seems to be saying they're being pulled into something that they don't understand, and they don't have the knowledge, the wisdom to warn them of the dangers of what they're doing. But they also don't have an alternative.
Yeah, he's also just completely freaked out, you know, and he's probably realized this at some point, but now it's completely hitting him over the head. Okay, we're going somewhere that not even Aragorn and Gandalf dared to go.
you know, if they couldn't do it or even attempt to do it, how the hell are we supposed to get through this? You know, because our whole mission had been just to get to the Black Gate, and that was absolutely impossible. Now we got to try this other dangerous way with this shady guide, you know, in Gollum. And so, yeah, oh man, this is just going to suck. Now, on the other hand, they mentioned, where's everybody else right now?
Over at Isengard.
Right, so they're just finishing talking to Saruman. So we're almost at the end of book three already in this one. And we're only three chapters in.
Yeah.
So I guess this has been like, what, 8 or 9 days already? I guess.
Yeah. Think so.
Yeah, because it was at least 3 in MMUEL, and then they had to get... Well, I want to add them up. yeah, okay. So add them up yourselves if you're that interested. Or look at the Appendix B. Yeah, so I don't know. But at this moment, Gandalf, even while he's talking to Saruman, he's always thinking about Frodo and Sam, above all. Like, that's his biggest, you know, thoughts or whatever. So it's like, even though Gandalf's not physically with them right now, they're still in his thoughts. He's, I guess, emotionally with them, you know, you would guess, even though he can't even quite tell where they're at.
Right. That connection is a little bit weak right now, is the point.
Right.
And Frodo's like kind of hoping for some emotional or spiritual guidance, and he's not really getting it.
Yeah, but he can't feel it, but it's not like it's not there. I think that's important to point out, you know. And then also, he's going somewhere where Aragorn and Gandalf have never been, but to Gollum's credit, Gollum has been here, and so maybe he was set loose or allowed to get out or escape, but credit to him for going into Mordor, surviving, coming out, and now willing to lead them back in too. So I mean, you know, that counts for something, I guess.
Absolutely.
All right, so we're actually almost pretty close to the end of the chapter here. So let's just a couple more things to knock out. They sat on the ground waiting for Frodo to decide what to do. They blend in with their cloaks, and above them they see 4 black riders fly by. Must have been super creepy. I imagine these things near the edge of Mordor in this wasteland, you know, fumy, evil place. Gosh, those must have been scary as they fly over.
And plus, they don't they wheel around
when
they're over them? Like, they kind of looks like they might have seen them, and they're not really sure, and they're debating, like, can these things
see? Well, they're lucky with the cloaks, too. The cloaks, they don't really have to worry that much, but it's almost weird that they don't have to worry. You know, like, it kind of freaks them out that they don't have to worry. Yeah. But anyways, Frodo stands up to announce his decision, but then horns and shouts go up because an army of men is coming to the Black Gate.
Just to clarify this, earlier, they had seen kind of spear tips glinting in the sun, and they like an army moving in the dust far away, right? Was this an army marching into Mordor?
Yeah, that was an army marching into Mordor, and so is...
And now we've got another one, possibly from a different direction, louder and closer.
Do you want to take what Sméagol says?
Sméagol thinks that they have come out of the south, beyond the Great River's End. They came up that road. They have passed on to the Black Gate, but many more may follow. Always more people coming to Mordor. One day, all the peoples will be inside.
Were there any Oliphants? Said Sam, forgetting his fear and the eagerness for news of strange places.
No Oliphants. What are Oliphants? Said Gollum.
Sam stood up, putting his hands behind his back, as he always did when speaking poetry, and began. Gray as a mouse, big as a house, nose like a snake, I make the earth shake. As I tramp through the grass, trees crack as I pass. With horns in my mouth, I walk in the south, flapping big ears. Beyond count of years, I stump around and round, and never lie on the ground. Not even to die, Oliphant am I. Biggest of all, huge, old, and tall. If ever you met me, you wouldn't forget me. If you never do, you won't think I'm true. But old Oliphant am I, and never I lie. That, said Sam, when he had finished reciting, that's a rhyme we have in the Shire. Nonsense, maybe, and maybe not. But we have our tales, too, and news out of the South, you know? So, just a little fun one at the end there. kind of highlights that, okay, the Shire, yeah, we all know that they were sheltered, extremely sheltered, but even they have
provincial.
Yeah,
crazy stories from very faraway lands, like the extreme south where Gollum thinks these men are coming from. And so Sam's wondering if they have Oliphants, which are obviously kind of their version of elephants.
Yeah, yeah.
TBD on that one. But anyways, they talk about that a little bit, about southern lands and stuff. And after that, Frodo stands back up, and you want to take that?
Frodo stood up. He had laughed in the midst of all his cares when Sam trotted out the old fireside rhyme of Oliphant, and the laugh had released him from hesitation. "I wish we had 1,000 Oliphants, with Gandalf on a white one at their head," he said. "Then we'd break away into this evil land, perhaps. But we've not, just our tired legs, that's all. Well, Smeagol, the third turn may turn the best. I will come with you."
All right, and so from there, yeah, so that was Frodo's decision. All right, we're going on Gollum's crazy way in the south that passes near Minas Morgul. Gollum, you can start leading us on at nightfall. And that's how the chapter ends. Only other thing to point out there, he was already about to make the decision, but he stands up and he laughs. We've talked about this before, how Tolkien, he's trying to create some new form of bravery. And so he kind of settles it with hobbits, like people just weirdly cheerful, you know? So like 2 pages ago, Frodo was questioning, man, I'm going somewhere where Gandalf and Aragorn can't even go. How am I supposed to do this? But then all of a sudden, 2 pages later, he's laughing at Sam, who can recite the Oliphant rhyme still in this place, you know, just remember it. And he's cheered up and he's in a better mood when he announces his decision. And he's at least full of confidence to go on for another night of hiking. Which is fun, exciting. This chapter, I don't know, it gives us direction for the next couple of chapters so that we kind of know where we're going, even if it didn't add too much. They really just sat around all chapter.
It's kind of like a halfway point, right, for this book.
Yeah, it changes. So I guess I hinted at this beginning. If you didn't read, or sorry, if you hadn't seen the movies, if you really went into this cold, when they got to the Black Gate, this is a total direction shift. You know, you this probably is like, whoa. And you probably were pissed at Gollum, like, what? There was another way, and you didn't say it before, even though everybody else kind of knew it was slightly coming. But, you know, it does actually make sense that Gollum's like, hey, you didn't ask. I actually kind of get that, and I could buy that. But, yeah, now it's, all right, we got to shift focus. It's going to be a little bit longer than we thought. Potentially more doable. Probably just about as dangerous. But, I don't know, there's a little bit more of a chance here because there's zero going through the Black Gate. And yeah, I don't know, it reinforces some other, you know, themes that we were talking about, like this hobbit courage, Frodo, how the ring's affecting him, his relationship with Gollum. So I mean, that's deepening in this chapter. So it's not like this was, you know, useless, but they didn't make physical progress at all. so maybe it did feel a little bit dragged out and useless. I mean, in other news, just I think this is going to go down as one of our shortest chapters ever. That's a good thing.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, if you don't have anything else, I think we could just stop here too.
Okay, no, I'm good.
"Were there any elephants?" asked Sam, forgetting his fear in his eagerness for news of strange places. "No, no Oliphants." "What are Oliphants?" said Gollum. Sam stood up, putting his hands behind his back, as he always did when speaking poetry, and began. "Grey as a mouse, big as a house, nose like a snake, I make the earth shake as I tramp through the grass. Trees crack as I pass. With horns in my mouth, I walk in the south, flapping big ears. Beyond count of years, I stomp round and round. Never lie on the ground, not even to die. Oliphant am I, biggest of all, huge, old and tall. If ever you'd met me, you wouldn't forget me. If you never do, you won't think I'm true. But old Oliphant am I, and I never lie."
All right, Clifford, we're back again.
Indeed we are. How are you, Patrick?
Good, how about you?
Doing well.
Yeah, we're a little late on this episode, but that's because, stuff was going on. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like these days you got plenty of excuses to be doing any sort of schedule you want.
Yeah. Yeah. What else is new? You got a cool sweater on. Looks very Christmassy.
A lovely Christmas sweater on, which I was just complaining to Patrick. I'm not allowed to wear, apparently, when it's not right before Christmas, even though it's a plenty fine sweater to wear 6 months out of the year.
Hey, Clifford, you can wear it for the 12 days after Christmas.
Well, we're past that.
Right, correct. So, yeah, you get the comments. What else is up? Pretty good. How about you?
Yeah, fine.
Yeah.
Nothing to report.
Yeah, not a ton to report for me either, besides, lots of fingers and pies. Lots of hobbies that are just blowing up in my face that I always have to keep up with. Yeah, this was the, if you're wondering, this was the chapter where they just sat at the Black Wall, and or not Black Wall, what's it called? Black Gate.
Okay.
and nothing, well, nothing plot-wise happened. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But yeah, this was one of our shortest episodes. I know, we could just keep it that way if we end it now.
Or we could not. No, I'm just kidding. That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. All right. Cool. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more. Yeah, we should be rolling. We're rolling all the way to the end of Two Towers now.
Mm-hmm.
Get ready. It picks up significantly.
Stay tuned. Thanks, y'all.